Happy Friday, folks. Hey, Martin Zender here. I got to tell you what I'm going to be doing here coming up. There's some exciting times here. This weekend, I'm going to be in Fairfax Station, Virginia. Or is it Maryland? Oh, man, I guess I better find out. I'm going to be at the home of Douglas Witherspoon and his family. A generous invitation to come there and share the good news with him and his family. It's a closed session. Sorry about that. But I'm going to be in Las Vegas, Nevada on Saturday, December 15th. And I'm going to be there that weekend. And if you'd like, if you're in the Las Vegas area or you want to be in the Las Vegas area, contact there is Joe Newman. You can call him at 702-546-9786. Apparently there's a healthy ecclesia there, 15, 20 people, maybe more. We'll find out. If you come, then there's going to be more. Saturday, December 22nd, the next weekend, I'm going to be in Sacramento, California. The contact there is Anita Butler, 916-524-1080. We're going to have a meeting there at Gerhard Rutsch home, and I invite you to attend. What am I going to talk about? I'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. But if nobody has any suggestions, I'm going to talk about the gospel of Paul. I'm going to talk about the grace of God. I guess that's a redundancy. I'm going to talk about how close we are to the end of the aeon, and I'm going to give you keys to overcoming suffering. Everyone is going through something out there and gonna make your burdens easier to bear. On Saturday, January 12th, I will be in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Contact is Wayland Dabbs. You can email him, wayland.dabbs@crown.com. Wayland.dabbs, D-A-B-B-S, @crown.com. And for you folks in the North Carolina, I'm going to be coming to Charlotte at the end of January. We're going to announce that date. Not sure when that's going to be. Late January 2013. Stay tuned. If you're on my mailing list at martinzender.com, you will be informed as to when that's going to happen. There's a lot of people in North Carolina, so I expect that to be a nice meeting. And then, of course, March 1st, 2nd, 3rd, I'm going to be back in Fort Lauderdale at Dania Beach with Dan Sheridan and Clyde Pilkington. Major conference there. So these are some upcoming dates. I'm excited about those. I hope to meet some of you there. All right, we're going to talk about marriage, and I want to go to these five verbs. I've been talking about this for a few days now. I've read this passage already many times, so let's just go to the verbs. The context here is Ephesians 5, of how a husband is supposed to love his wife. Ephesians 5, verse 25 through 33. Christ hallowed the ecclesia. He cleansed it. He nurtured it. He cherished it. And he's going to present it to God as a chaste virgin. And likewise, men are supposed to treat their wives. Men are exhorted to treat their wives as Christ treated the ecclesia, to hallow, to cleanse, to nurture, to cherish, to present. How does this work? Well, the word hallow, it means to separate. It's the same root word here in the Greek of the word holy and saint, set apart. It means that your wife shall be separate to you from all other women, as the ecclesia is separate to Christ. You care for her. And all other, just like an ecclesia is an outcalled, right? Ecclesia, outcalled. Ecclesia is people, it's not a building. Likewise, drawing the analogy here with Christ, a man outcalls a woman from among the entire race of women, and he cares for her, and he nourishes her, and she is separated unto him. Cleanse. A man is to cleanse his wife. Well, one way is to do that is to wash her feet. All right. Another way, a figurative way, is that you keep her unspotted and undefiled from anything or anyone in this world that would seek to soil or harm her. You keep her from harm. You are a filter between her and the dirty, awful world. You protect her. Nurture. A husband is to provide a wife an environment conducive to her happiness and growth as a person. What is she interested in? What does she like to do? Encourage that. Ask her questions. Listen to her. Be open. Communication. Women love to be listened to. It's really an enjoyable thing to do. Let her tell you what's on her mind, what's on her heart, and then again, nurture it. It's like creating an environment, like the soil is nurtured for the production of a plant. You water it, you give it light, you give it air. You do this for your wife. You become soil for her to grow in. You become one who encourages and enables her dreams. Cherish. A man promises to cherish his wife, to take her under his wing and protect her from evil, and to thank God. This is part of cherishing, important part, to thank God every day for granting him such a gift as her. A woman is a gift. And sometimes, men, it may take a lot of effort to convince your wife that she's a gift. I pray you can do that, and I pray that she can receive it. Then you give thanks to God for giving you a woman that you can cherish. Men want to cherish. Men want to put a woman on a pedestal. They want to worship a woman. They want to serve a woman. Deep down, I don't think a lot of men really realize this, because it's a deep down need implanted in our forefather Adam, and now it's implanted in you. But there's a lot of baggage on top of that. I know there's a lot of disappointment, and you've not hoped to dare to believe that you can have this kind of relationship with your wife. I know your marriage is long gone, I know, but it can resurrect. It really can. Start with service. Start with worship. Start with adoration. You have to make the first move, man. That's my recommendation. I know it'd be great if she walked in the room in a sexy outfit, because that's your love language is sex. I understand that. Women, I think you need to understand that too. A woman's love language, generally speaking, is to be cherished, adored. She just wants to be the center of your universe. That's all. That's not asking much, is it? Try it out and see what happens. And then the whole purpose of this loving environment is to help the woman become radiant and joyful, to be the fullest person she can be. Now, this is the equivalent of Christ presenting to himself, quote, a glorious ecclesia, having not spot or wrinkle, becoming holy and flawless. Now, we don't expect your wife to become holy and flawless. Of course she's not. That's impossible. But the blessing of love from a husband to a wife grants the husband, in return, a happy and fulfilled wife. So you're really doing this for yourself. As Christ presents to himself a glorious ecclesia, having not spot or wrinkle, he's presenting that to himself. So you might say it's selfish. Okay, so look at it this way, men, husbands. You give to your wife, you hallow her, you separate her from all other women and give her your special attention. You cleanse her, that is, you be a filter between her and the defilements of the world. You nurture her, you give her an environment to grow and to thrive and to be the person that God meant for her to be. You cherish her, take her under your wing and protect her, and you will be presenting to yourself a glorious wife, having not spot or wrinkle. And that's a figure of speech. She's not perfect. Well, with Christ, it's not. As he presents the ecclesia, he is going to perfect us. But in the meantime, we have a type and a shadow of this, and that is how a man presents to himself his wife. And he himself provides the environment for that. Christ does that for the ecclesia. It's good for the ecclesia. It's good for Christ. A man does that for his wife. It's good for the wife. It's good for the husband. It's a win-win situation. It's never going to work perfectly, and forget even trying or waiting for it to work perfectly. It's not going to happen. But we do the best we can, and you have to not get discouraged when you fail. You know how it is on a diet where you try to do everything right, and then one day you blow it. You go like 5 days and you do everything great. Your diet's going great. And then one day you eat, you know, three Musketeers bars. That's the equivalent of 9 Musketeers. 3 times 3 equals 9. So, and then you think, well, I blew it, so I'm just going to chuck the whole thing, forget the diet. No, you make a mistake, you acknowledge it, you get up, and the next moment is a new moment. The next day is a new day. Don't give up. Don't give up. A repeated theme of mine is grass is not greener on the other side of divorce. Stay with each other. Love each other. Now, I promised you yesterday that we're going to end with a bang here. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the premier instance of eroticism in the Garden of Eden. And of course, it happened with Adam and Eve, our favorite sex couple in the Bible. Well, I guess it's my favorite anyway. God did not take a rib from Adam to create Eve. God put Adam to sleep, and then he took a vital part of him away. What did he take? It wasn't a rib. If it was a rib, then the Hebrew word Allah would have been used in the Hebrew text, A-L-A. But that word is not used. The word that is used is the Hebrew word Sela, T-S-E-L-A. What does that word mean? Ah, good question. The translators wondered the same thing. They wished it was Allah. There would have easily been a rib, but it wasn't. It was Sela, so they had to go to other places of Scripture where that word was used and try to figure out what that meant. That word is used several times in the book of Ezekiel to describe the side walls of the temple. Now, the side walls of the temple were hollow. The walls of the temple had rooms in them. The temple was three stories, and the rooms tapered from top to bottom. I think maybe the top was 7 cubits, the middle floor was 6 cubits, the bottom floor was 5 cubits. I'm not quite sure about that, but it's some kind of cubit thing, all right? But it did descend. It did taper from top to bottom. The translators looked at this word in the context of the sidewalls, and that it was translated sidewalls many times, and they thought, well, this must be something on Adam's side. So we'll just call it a rib. And in fact, in the New American Standard Bible, there's a footnote, because they know this isn't an anatomical rib, and the footnote says, or something on Adam's side. They just didn't know what to do with it. But this word cella isn't describing, it's not describing the location of this thing that was removed from Adam, it's describing the shape of it. It's a hollow, angular organ. A hollow, angular organ, like the rooms in the sidewall of the temple. Hollow, angular. The Concordant translates this, I think the verse is Genesis 2:7. All right, I should have my Bible in front of me, but I don't. Concordant translates it, and God removed an angular organ, and from that he built a woman. Do you know what God removed from Adam? He removed the womb. He removed the uterus. Isn't that great? Isn't that a revelation? Oh my God, what does a man long for in the marriage embrace? He sure as heck doesn't long for his missing rib. No, but Adam was once a complete human being. He was both sexes. He had all the masculinity and the strength and the virility of male, and yet he had the sensitivity and the gentleness and the compassion of a woman. He was the complete human being. But God, as I told you yesterday, doesn't like evenness. He wants to create a need. He wants to create a lack. So he puts Adam to sleep, and he takes, one might say, the best parts from him. He takes this angular vault, angular organ, this womb, the uterus, takes it, and from the uterus he builds a woman. And now she has the grace and the beauty. I forgot to mention that. Adam was beautiful. Take that away, and he's just merely handsome now. He was beautiful, now he's merely handsome. But the woman is beautiful, and she's sensitive, and she's gentle, and she's compassionate, and she has everything he lacks, and he has everything that she lacks. Now, she really doesn't lack in a sense, because as I told you yesterday, she's created complete. She did not have a part removed from her. So Adam has the lack, and you see what he longs for. So here's the first instance of eroticism in the Bible. Adam looks down, and suddenly his sexual appendage is rising to find the old neighborhood, and it's going toward Eve, and a man longs for his missing part. And so you see now that when the two become one flesh, it's a beautiful graphic reuniting of what humanity once was, the complete human being. Rib is stupid. It doesn't take us anywhere, doesn't lead us anywhere. There's no revelation there. Doesn't make any sense. But this, oh my God, this makes so much sense. It's ridiculous. And so Adam's anatomy rose to the occasion, sought out the old neighborhood, and again, the motion is created of Adam going toward Eve. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and cling to his wife. Oh, love this truth. I hope that is as great a revelation to you as it is to me. It explains a lot about the sexes. It explains a lot about why men are the way they are. I hope it'll help explain to women why men are the way they are. We're desperate. We're missing something. And you have it. On Monday, I want to start a new series. I'm going to get to the Revelation series. I am going to do that. But I have so much traveling coming up that I don't think I'll be able to really get serious about that until March. But I'm not going to leave you with nothing in the meantime. I want to start a series on the book of 2 Timothy, maybe for 2 or 3 weeks. I want to use Clyde Pilkington's excellent book, The Church in Ruins. So I want to start that Monday. Even when I'm traveling, I can make these audio files. I can have a recorder and I have my computer, so I'll be able to still talk to you even when I'm on the road. Even when I'm in Las Vegas, Sacramento, Charlotte, Fort Lauderdale, I'm still gonna bring you the show. And so are Dan Sheridan and I. So hang in there. There's a lot of good stuff coming. I'm going to continue to feed you, bring you the truth. This is as good for me as it is for you. Thanks for being with me. Have a great weekend. We'll be here Monday.